Welcome to the Analytics of Dynasty Daily Podcast. I'm your host, Jordan McNamara. Using some more grinding the mocks data, looking at team profiles and looking at who might be drafting what position. Really interesting in terms of trying to crowdsource some thoughts on mock drafts and then looking to see how that might affect existing players. So some interesting stuff here. I have broken it down a little bit in terms of looking at essentially the last 2 months. So I looked at February and March as data. I realize a little bit flawed. I wish you could break it down more discreetly into like last 12 days or last, 3 weeks or whatever. But it only allows months. So I just chose February and March just so I had a pretty good sample size. I think as we sort of get going along towards the draft, we can probably just use April, and that'll be post some of these trades and stuff like that. It'll reshape the data. But for, I would say, a large percentage of the league, this isn't something we're going to necessarily need to worry about with those trades. So let's do a quick rundown here. For Arizona, 7% wide receivers, their top five are essentially non-skill position players. So it's pretty rare for them to be in the market for any skill positions. So I think we can move on from that. And again, you're probably looking more towards day two on a running back. Good news for Chase Edmonds. 62% of quarterback for Atlanta. That is Fields a third of the time, and Wilson about 19% of the time. Lance comes in just under 9%. So that's them sitting at four is going to be a really interesting pivot point. If they go that direction, I think they should, but whether or not they go that direction, if it's the guy they like, is that quarterback two or three on their board, for example? Those are all things that I think are going to come into that. Baltimore taking a wide receiver about 33% of the time. Bateman's at 13%. Terrace Marshall is at 10%. Kadarius Toney's at 6%. So something to add there with Marquise Brown. They have been attempting to be active in free agency with some of these wide receivers. They've been linked to them, so it wouldn't surprise if they went back to that position. Buffalo Bills, it's more of a defense centric draft for them. It's 14% for running back. That is third in terms of their needs. I think it's pretty unlikely, especially with the signing of Breida. Doesn't really make a ton of sense at this point to have them in on the running back position. Carolina, 71.4% at a quarterback. That's Trey Lance is the highest one at 30, just short of 31%. Justin Fields just short of 23%. Zach Wilson just short of 12%. So they have made no secret out of wanting a quarterback. I think the Mac Jones number is too low. So I think that Wilson number is probably going to go down. I think the Mac Jones number should probably go up. And we'll see if San Francisco is going to be the landing spot for Mac Jones. I think it's going to influence these other guys. I have a hard time seeing Wilson get there to them. The Jet stuff is so locked in with Wilson. So I'd be surprised if Wilson made it to Carolina. Chicago, the number two priority for them. Wide receiver, just over a quarter of the time, 27%. Rashad Bateman, 13.7%. They've made no secret that they're interested in moving on from Anthony Miller, including him in trade negotiations, trade rumors, all that stuff. I wouldn't be surprised if they sell him for a day three pick here at some point going forward. I think he was one of the starters in the Russell Wilson trade as well. I mean, those things are plenty there. Here's an interesting one, and this actually prompted my Twitter thread for me, which is exceptionally rare. I don't usually do Twitter threads. But I thought it was a notable thing here. Cincinnati Bengals, 72% tackle, 19% wide receiver. It's almost entirely Ja'Marr Chase for the wide receiver, as you would expect, being there in the top five. What's fascinating about this is I sort of look at the T. Higgins number, and a couple of it would have been the 2020 edition of the Analytics of Dynasty. I did the survivorship stuff, and it's basically looking at, hey, how likely is it that your team drafts somebody and then supersedes them? So I use supersede. It's my old job, but basically take someone that has higher pedigree than them, essentially, right? That is above them in terms of pedigree the next year. Incredibly, incredibly rare for first round guys. So it's, when you look at it, it's actually remarkable. The quarterback, the first round wide receivers, only 3% of the time they supersede. I think the last one is there was a couple of them early on in this century that formulate that data, and I believe the last one was Roddy White. San Francisco might have done it too. Maybe, I don't know if it was AJ Jenkins or someone. He might have factored into it as well. But it's really, really, really rare. So that would be the overall point about first-round wide receivers. It's rare. So rare, in fact, that 3% for them, it's 10% in the next 3 years. So 9 out of 10 teams don't address the position with more pedigree in the next three drafts than right, 90% of teams don't address it with more pedigree. So that's a really, really secure thing. Again, that's not to say you can't be sniped from other ways, right? If that's someone lower down on the pedigree scale outproducing you, a free agent, an existing player outproducing you. We've seen all of those stories. What is fascinating, though, is when you look at second-round wide receivers, which is the T. Higgins profile this year, 20% of the time they're superseded. How does Grinding the Mocks put it? 19% for Ja'Marr Chase. So I don't think that mock drafters are out there saying, oh, let's look at the prior on this, and then, oh, let's see, all right, 20%, so we got to put a wide receiver here, 20%. No, it's just kind of naturally how it goes in. And that's, again, one of the things with base rates that's really, really helpful is just by sort of knowing the base number, you can get kind of close to a pretty good approximation for the average situation. And this kind of fits into that, right? That this is another example of when you get base rates and market rates coming together, it's really, really helpful in terms of kind of guiding our process. This is patterns repeat themselves all the time in Dynasty. Base rates and market data converging together, that's something that we can think about. And so if you think about, like, the odds that T. Higgins gets superseded in the next 3 years, call it, versus the odds that a guy like Brandon Ayuk gets superseded in the next 3 years. They took him on day one. Now they've traded away picks for the next 3 years. It's going to be incredibly difficult for them to supersede Brandon Ayuk. T. Higgins, much more bullets for them to fire. So, again, that's just something I constantly come back to with these guys. Everyone thinks you're safe, but there's a 20% quarter of a chance that it happens, and you know those things can add up. And again, we're playing the margins. That's probably 10 times as likely this year that T. Higgins gets superseded than Brandon Ayuk gets superseded over the next 3 years. That's a huge difference in terms of moving your margins. Again, it's a minority of times, but in terms of safety, right? If I could say, hey, here's something that's 10 times more risky, is it really worth it? Again, it's a lower level risk, generally speaking, but in terms of probabilities, like, that's a big difference. So that was something that really caught my attention. 60%, just short of 60% of the time, Cincinnati takes Penei Sewell, and then it's Ja'Marr Chase is basically at 17%, just short of 17%. Cleveland's going all defense, so nothing really on offense to note there. Dallas, their fourth biggest priority is tight end in terms of their stuff. It's only 5.7%. All of that is Kyle Pitts. Denver, quarterback, just short of 10% of the time. That's their third most likely. It's Trey Lance at 5%, Justin Fields at 3%. And I expect that they're going to be in the trade-up market. I think that's going to change. And the other thing, too, is I think as these mocks get going, you're going to get – what I think we'll see is we're going to get – so we'll get some of the teams in there, right? So just to run it down again, Jacksonville's at 1, the Jets at 2. I expect both of them to be quarterback. San Francisco's at 3. And if that is Mac Jones, that's going to open up the board a little bit further because we thought Mac Jones would maybe slide a little bit further down the board. You know, some of the Grinding the Mock stuff suggested that. I think a lot of the NFL media suggested that he was more of like a – 10 through 20 type of 11 through 20 type of prospect than he was a top 10 guy. If this is an indication that he's going to go higher, we're going to see guys later in the first round potentially be more able to get in on quarterback, right? That's maybe still, it's going to be 5 top 10 picks, but it allows a team like Denver to move up. it allows a team like Carolina to move up. It allows a team. Those are really the two big ones, I would say, at this point. You know, I guess if New England wanted to, it allows them more of an opportunity to move up. Atlanta sitting at four is going to be really fascinating. Cincinnati sitting at five is going to be really fascinating. There's a couple of tackles in this class. If they wanted to move back a couple spots, you know, that might be something that they could do and maybe not necessarily be in all that worse of a situation and pick up future capital. We'll see. But that's certainly an interesting thing. I think this trade up for San Francisco, if that is Mac Jones, I think you're going to see more quarterbacks going to Denver as a result of that. All right, Detroit Lions, 50, just over 50% wide receiver. That's Waddle at 22%, Chase at 14.5%. Quarterback 15% of the time. The lead guy there is Trey Lance. So we'll see. You know, they could be in on quarterback too if it's the thing with Mac Jones going up there, and this is going to be a constant story, and it's going to be like Sam Darnold to Cleveland where it doesn't happen, and it's going to be kind of comical. But where it was like pre-assumed that was going to happen, and the odds for Baker Mayfield were like 30-1, and it was a pretty lucrative investing opportunity, I must say, in terms of those odds that year. So when you see Mac Jones going way, way up there, I think what we're going to look at and see is you're going to get essentially more quarterbacks in there, right? You're going to get more quarterbacks falling down the board. It opens up an opportunity like Detroit, like Denver. And so I think in a situation where it was going to be the top four picks, like three of those are quarterbacks or four of those are quarterbacks, if we're going to have five, we're going to be able to spread that out. I think it'll get spread out to you're basically going to see Carolina's odds jump up. You'll see Denver's odds jump up. Maybe Detroit's a little bit. Again, I think they're in on Goff. You might see some outliers. You might see in New England, for example, they might be interested. Maybe it's going to be tough for Washington to move up, but you could see some teams from that range. It's much more accessible to get to like six or seven for a quarterback than it would be to get up to like three. So, and we saw how much it took to get to three. It might take a little bit less to get to six or seven. So it might take a one less future first or something like that. So that would be something that I would keep in mind if that number three pick is going to be Mac Jones. Okay, Green Bay, 46% of the time taking wide receiver. That is Kadarius Toney is the lead guy there at 14%. Bateman in there as well, Rondell Moore, 10% of the time going there. So Houston doesn't have a first. Indianapolis is all over the place in terms of specifics. 13.6% of the time they're taking a wide receiver. That's the third most. There's no real specific consensus guy there. So they're kind of all over the place in terms of their board. They don't have a ton of like overt critical needs. So I think that's kind of showing up in some of their data. Jacksonville is essentially locked in on Trevor Lawrence. Kansas City offensive line is their first, second, and fourth most options. Wide receivers fifth at 9%. Terrace Marshall's the lead guy there. Again, that's probably an unlikely outcome with some of the needs that they have. Las Vegas, no one on offense, which is actually good news for Ruggs, good news for Edwards, actually really good news for John Brown. Chargers, 9.4% for Kyle Pitts. That is third. That's all tight end. That is the position at 9.4%. All of that is Kyle Pitts, and that is number three in terms of their priorities. I'll say if Kyle Pitts is there, like they got to take him because you keep building around that quarterback. I mean, I don't think that's going to happen at 13. Would be very, very surprising. So, but if that were to happen, man, that would be really, really nice. Again, I think Miami is the most likely team at six. The Rams, no first. Miami, 43% of the time going wide receiver. Devonta Smith, 18, just over 18. Jamar Chase, 14.5. Najee Harris is in there actually for running backs. It's the fifth most likely outcome. He is going 8.7% of the time. So, yeah, you sort of look at that and say, okay, that's an interesting spot. They're taking running back 10% of the time. So again, if you sort of look at that Gaskin price, man, if the risk is 10%, and it's probably higher than that. Again, they have multiple picks. They have, and this is probably this the way this is calculated is probably consuming both of those picks into one calculation. So maybe you double that for running back. Say it's more like 20% of the time, I think is probably another way to think of it. Notably, no tight end. I'd be shocked if they sit at six and Kyle Pitts is there and they don't adjust and they don't take him. Again, I don't think that's a knock on Gesicki at all. Gesicki's playing more wide receiver than really anything. The Patriots quarterback 27.8% of the time, so I don't think the Cam Newton thing really holds them out of the quarterback position. Mac Jones 16.3%. Again, I would suspect that goes down. Trey Lance 8.4%. There for him. Jalen Waddle leads the receivers at just short of 12%. 21.6% of the time they're taking wide receivers. Tight end, 15% of the time. That's Pitts. Again, I don't think that's going to happen now. I think Pitts is going to go earlier than that, and I don't think that they necessarily have a need for him either unless they wanted to run some really interesting, like, 13 personnel. That would be pretty fun to watch. But by and large, I think offensive skill position – right. That is showing up here. So wide receiver could definitely be a help to them. And you remember the Alabama pipeline, him and Saban, Belichick and Saban are close, and there's some Alabama pipeline going on in these mock drafts with Mac Jones, Waddle, Devonta Smith as well. New Orleans Saints, just short of 21% of the time, they're going wide receiver. The most common wide receiver to them is Tony, and then it's all over the place. He's the fifth most projected player to them. They're actually in on Mac Jones to a lower level about 10% of the time. Again, I think that's probably unlikely that happens. The New York Giants, 46% for wide receivers. So that's not a death knell for a guy like Sterling Shepard, but I think that's a notable one. I expect that to go down a little bit now that they signed Kenny Galladay. 27% of that is Jalen Waddle. Just over 14% is for Devonta Smith. Again, they pick 11th, so that's totally in that range. Kyle Pitts is all of the tight end. He is a tight end. Tight end is the second position. So when you look at this, almost two-thirds of about 60%, just over 60% is offensive skill position. So, again, when we're thinking about that skill position, I think we've got to be careful that looking at them because it's a really, really mock situation that they get some skill position help. So, again, I think Ingram long-term, I think he's got a safe floor, but a Pitt signing would take off some ceiling. Again, I'm not necessarily sure either of those wide receivers is going to come in and make an immediate impact. The New York Jets, a lot of it's Zach Wilson. I think their number is a little confusing. I think a lot of it is trade down stuff too. So Wilson's by far the most projected player, basically at essentially two thirds of the projected players going there. And then it's largely trade down type scenarios. Philadelphia, 55% at wide receiver. That is the highest rank. And I will say in terms of looking, going back to that T. Higgins, Brandon Ayuk type situation, incredibly rare. That's incredibly rare for that to happen. So you look at Jalen Reagor went first last year. For him to get superseded, it's a 3% odds historically, and it's happened once in, call it in the last 20 years. It's really rare. Again, could it happen? Sure. I think they've probably taken themselves out of that game a little bit. In terms of being later in the first round, you're not so much worried about Ja'Marr Chase. I think this number is probably going to come down from the wide receiver position. But that is a bet. That's an interesting bet to take. Which side do you like? I think the trade down helps Jalen Reagor, but it is a much higher number historically than you would expect that base rate of them taking a wide receiver. So that's the thing I think we need to really pay attention to. Again, there's plenty of reason to get out of Jalen Reagor right now. I think some of this data is a reason for getting out of him. I expect it will get more favorable to him, but I still expect him to be, you know, the market to project something like 10 times more likely than the base rate. So that would be the thing that I would say. Pittsburgh really high on offensive tackle, 44% of the time. That is the lead. 21.3% running back. So that is second. Again, I don't think it necessarily hurts anyone, but it's Harris basically 3-1 over ETN, 2.5, 3-1 over ETN as the most likely guy there. And when you sort of look at that, how does that factor into, you know, let's look at the residual, because 8 out of 10 times of saying they're not taking him, is that Anthony McFarland? Is it Penny Snell? Right, those shots deep in drafts when we're looking double digit rounds, those are the things that, hey, if they don't go this route, like those are the things that could pay off pretty decently. So again, it's no foregone conclusion. And again, you're taking the, they have other needs at more priority positions. I don't think there's a ton of depth on day two to really harm them. Maybe James Conner comes back. I don't know. But that's something that I would look at and say, huh, like I think there's a decent shot that someone slides through that, especially with the fact that they have other needs. Someone slides through in the respect of one of the existing veterans on their team. San Francisco, no first. Seattle, no first. Well, I take that back. San Francisco has a first. It's probably a quarterback. The market hasn't reacted to it. Seattle has no first. Tampa Bay, the third most likely is running back at 16, just over 16%. It's 9% for Harris, 7% for ETN. I don't think they're going to go that route, especially with Fournette coming back, and they just addressed the position last year on day two. So seeing that happen, that'd be pretty, it'd be pretty unlikely, would be my thought. When you look at it, third round guys get superseded 13% of the time. Again, maybe he's already been superseded. I just look at draft capital because it was too difficult to track free agent signings and how do you grade those and yada, yada. I just look at draft pedigree as a proxy for it. And he's probably already been superseded. Are they going to invest more than that? This is a team that already has a pretty rich depth chart. I'd be surprised. I thought that number should come down on the running back thing would be my thought. Again, it's just over the base rate, but this is a situation where I think it's less likely than the average team would be to take a running back. Tennessee, 85% of the time they're taking an edge guy. Wide receivers, a little bit less likely. It's, you know, like 5% or so. So, it is screaming edge for them. And if you sort of add in defensive tackle, it's like 90%. So you think defensive line or edge, pass rushing, something like that they're going to go with. Washington football team, this is one I'm not sure on how much I trust these numbers, but I think it's an interesting investment. 35% of the time was at quarterback. Again, some of that's a lot of this data is pre-free agency, so that doesn't really bake in the Fitzpatrick number. 25% of that is Mac Jones. Again, I expect that to go down. Heck, maybe Lance or Fields is more gettable for them, so that would be the other thing. You know, do they want to do that? Like, this is a team that could conceivably be in a contending window with that defense and a veteran quarterback. Again, if you sort of want to go the defense and veteran quarterback route, like having a defense that can really rush the passer and a high variance quarterback, we have seen that with Eli Manning. We have seen that pay off with prior iterations of this particular formula. So it's not crazy to suggest that they could be a really big time contender and make a deep stretch run with a high variance quarterback. We have seen that happen, and you need ceiling, and I think Fitzpatrick certainly has that. Is his floor all over the place? Yes. Is this, you know, call it a standard deviation all over the place? Yes. But that's the thing that I would think about with them. Wide receiver is 20% of the time. Again, that's pre-Curtis Samuel signing there. So Tony at 6.7%, Bateman at 6.3%. Is that, you know, is tight end in play for them? Probably not in the first round, I wouldn't guess, because that's a little early, but maybe a second round type tight end. That would be pretty interesting as well. So that's a team that has some interesting strengths. And, you know, how do you sort of build around that is the big question. But they do have some really intriguing pieces, and I'm really interested in them. Maybe they're in on the, you know, to try and help out Fitzpatrick on the offensive line, something like that as well. So, all right, well, that'll do it for this episode. It is the Grinding the Mocks Team Breakdown Edition. Until next time, continue embracing the variance, and we'll talk again very soon.